C7. Number 19B.
Yeah. This brings us to the chapter, Teaching Christian Science. A terrific chapter. Chapter that perhaps is not read very often because most Christian scientists feel that they are not a teacher, and therefore this is not exactly the chapter that they should investigate. But naturally, this has to do with every student teaching himself to be a Christian scientist. It's not so much learning to be a Christian scientist, but to teach oneself, so to say, from the point of view of principle, to be a Christian scientist. Can you see why it isn't so much learning Christian science? Because learning Christian science would mean that from a human standpoint I begin to learn the subject, but it's teaching. We teach ourselves, but from the point of view of principle. And therefore, it's no more learning, it's much more teaching, principle teaching us how to be a Christian scientist. It has nothing to do with the organizational part of teaching. It doesn't say who is allowed to be a teacher, how many students he is allowed to teach, what he has to teach, which program he has to teach, nothing like that. It is free from every organizational aspect, but it is very much bound to the principle of Christian Science. There is a most interesting scriptural note for this chapter. It says, "Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning." This is from Proverbs, from a time before the Greek period, before science was born in Greece, and it contained already the deep wisdom of what afterwards the Greeks were teaching. It says, teach a wise man. It doesn't say, teach an ignorant man, and he will be wiser. He said, only a wise man can increase in wisdom. Ignorance cannot increase in knowledge. This would be dualism. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. Showing, really, that truth fosters truth. It isn't so that ignorance can learn the truth. It's science that fosters science. So the dualism here would be the belief that we can instruct ignorance to the point of becoming knowledgeable, of becoming understanding. This is a very common attitude, that we can make out of a non-Christian scientist a Christian scientist, that we can make out of a mortal a scientist, a Christian scientist. As if darkness could ever learn the light or perceive the light. Those two are irreconcilable. As if a teacher who knows science could instruct a student who does not know science. This is dualism. It's the ordinary attitude which we have gained in the world, that a teacher can teach so somebody who does not know. This seems to be what happens in a school. But we must go deeper and really see what is possible. And the oneness sense here, which is already indicated in the scripture note, would show that only science can know science, that only a scientific mentality can increase in scientificalness, that only out of knowing can come more knowing. It is actually that what I said, where the Greeks then began to open up the new field of science. And, you know, one of the founders of science, can you help me how it is pronounced in English, was Thales of Miletus. Thales of Miletus. He was the last of the seven sages in the Ionic era, and the first one also of the scientific era, of the founder of science. And he had one short epitome, and he wrote it on his temple. One was, know yourself, know yourself. And the other point was that he said, only like can understand like. Only like can understand like. Give instruction to a wise man, and then he will be wiser. We cannot instruct ignorance so that it becomes knowledge. Only knowledge can foster knowledge. Only science can foster science. Therefore, know yourself, he said. Don't be ignorant about what you are and what you have. Try to see what is knowing in you. What is the knowing in you? That can know its likeness. And this is so important in Christian Science. And Mrs. Eddy then tries to show through that whole chapter on teaching Christian Science that actually only like can understand like, that only principle can understand its ideas, that not mortals can understand principle and its ideas. Therefore, that our attitude from which we are reasoning must be principle's attitude and not our attitude. So that understanding can only be gained by understanding. This is so important. You know, I say it already the third or fourth time. Why? Because if one analyzes in general the attitude of a student of Christian Science, one can see very easily that he feels, I do not know, but I would like to know. Therefore, I try to study, and through that study, my ignorance can fade away and I will know. And so it is the condemnation of mortals to till the ground, really. It's the Adam dream that they take as a method. Instead of taking as a method, really, the fact that we have the mind of Christ, that we are the Son of God, that we have the mind of Christ, and that therefore we can culture that which we have, that which we know yourself what you know, and culture what we know, and that will give us more knowledge. Quite a different approach. The general feel is, I don't have knowledge, therefore I have to gain knowledge. That's a false approach, that's a dualistic approach. No knowledge on one side, gaining knowledge on the other side. The true method is to contemplate what we already know And the human mind naturally says, but if you contemplate what you already know, you will never know something more. That's how the human mind reacts. Because the human mind still thinks in the old Greek way of having quantities of knowledge, you know, and blocks of knowledge. And if you have a block of knowledge, if you want to have more than a block of knowledge, you have to gain another block of knowledge, then you have two blocks of knowledge. This is still that a sense of the Greeks in which we are trained, that there are blocks, that there is a division, that knowledge can be divided up in greater or smaller parts of knowledge. They haven't yet seen the oneness of being, which says, only like can understand like. Only by contemplating constantly what we know yourself. Constantly contemplating Christian Science what we already know gives us more knowledge. Why? Because that which we know divinely has a seed within itself. That unfolds more knowledge. Not we are unfolding more knowledge by accretion, by addition. There is that wonderful sense that spirit unfolds, which means that if we contemplate our categories, if we contemplate our fundamentals, these fundamentals show us more knowledge. They give us more knowledge. At the beginning, perhaps one thinks this is a mystical sense of things because one can't reason it out humanly, but divinely, this is the law. That contemplating really what we know is contemplating the seed of what we know, and the seed takes root and the seed begins to unfold and bring forth new aspects of knowledge. Can you see that if we really get this message straight, can you see that? That we have the answer for that terrific, tragic situation that Christian scientists have been studying, the Christian Science books, perhaps for 20 years, many for 30 years, quite a big number for 40 years, and after 40 years have to admit that they don't know much more than 40 years ago. This is the tragedy. And this is not an exception. This is more or less the general rule. Anybody who is honest somehow admits that. The greatest percentage of it admits that. And yet you can see they have done all they perhaps would be able to do. Namely, they were searching, they were reading, they were studying the textbook. The textbook is worn out, everything is underlined, cross-references, and so on. We can't say they were not in earnest, but they did choose the wrong method. The wrong method, the wrong attitude, saying, I know little, I want to know more, and in order to know more, I must seek something else. You see? Something else. Whatever that else is, that higher understanding, they can't. It is contemplating what we have, nurturing what we have seen, polishing what we have seen, getting deeper into that, those things that we have seen. And naturally what we see is that we have to see the categories. And if we contemplate that, that has that enormous effect of having the seed within itself. And that brings to us suddenly like this, science revealed, that suddenly brings to us an enlightenment, suddenly shows us a completely different angle of the whole thing, or a completely different model of approach. It has the seed within itself. That's the law of creativity again. That's why I tried to show last week in the syllabus class to say, don't think you lose your time by going over and over and over contemplating mind, the ideas of mind. What are the ideas of mind? How are they linked together? How do they blend? Why do they have the same tonality? How do then the ideas of mind blend with the ideas of spirit? Why after mind must come spirit? Why not so? Can you see? It was all contemplating things which we know. And you will see that if you do that, that has such a strong unfolding power within itself that suddenly something is forming itself, take forms in your consciousness, which you say, God, I never thought of that. This is quite something new. That is something quite higher, more terrific. Yes? This is the law, you see. It's going over what you know. Know, and that increases in knowledge. Yes? So, what did he say as sense of dualism, oneness? Perhaps we could write here in teaching Christian Science, science fosters science. Science fosters science. And perhaps as a sense of dualism, we can have ignorance and understanding. But these are two things. There is naturally much more about it. If in that epitome that science fosters science, actually we have to see what this all implies. It's such a short epitome. It really means, you see, also something terrific, that we should see that our subject is science. And so many feel, oh yes, that's wonderful, because one feels so important if one feels one is studying a science, not just a religion or just a dogma. So one feels terribly important, you know, and say, oh yeah, we are scientists and so on. But what it shows is that we are only a scientist if we approach also the subject of science through a scientific method. Because only science fosters science. And that is what happened only too often, that we feel, that students feel, the subject they investigate is science, but they don't see that they do not approach it as science, that they approach it in the old way. That they park the old religious sense into the new subject and approach it in the same old way as they have been approaching it before they knew that the textbook presents a science. Therefore, only scientific method and science are one. Only scientificalness and science is one. So that we feel the method of investigating the textbook, the way of dealing with that subject, must also be scientific. Because the tendency is only too big that you want to approach science through meditation, through inspiration, through listening to God, and whatever the method may be. Mrs. Eddy never says you learn Christian Science by listening to God or listening to the text. She says it is understanding. So that the way must be science and the object must be science. They must be one, or we have a great sense of dualism. Mystical approach to a scientific subject is dualism. They are two opposite concepts. And therefore, very soon, one naturally waters down the science, and it just becomes a subject where you use scientific terms to express mystical concepts. This is the dualism. That's where Mrs. Eddy is very hot in this chapter, you know, to show that what makes us a scientist, what makes That's the point here. You see, she says, what makes us a scientist is not that the subject, that the object of investigation is a science, that God is a science. She says, what makes you a scientist is that you approach this science through a scientific way. That's it. And her text is full of that sense. If we naturally begin to understand that there is only one science, namely the object of science, the scientific way, one begins then naturally to see that that dualistic sense falls of having a teacher and a student, of having a teacher or lecturer and an audience. This is again dualistic. It just shows that there is only one science at work, and that science is in the so-called teacher and in the so-called student. So teacher and student can be eliminated in that whole concept and just see science talks to science. Mind talks to mind. And therefore, what we should entertain when we present the subject is actually that I feel I'm not I as a person. I'm not going to present in a very clear and a very masterly way the science. We should have a feeling science is now interpreting itself through the presentation, and knowing that all that which is scientific in the audience is actually the listener, is actually the student, the scientific approach, the scientificalness in the student is actually that which can take up something, which can receive the message, so that it is science talking to science, and that should be our attitude. So that within that attitude we can see mind listens to mind. There's only one mind that teaches and one mind that receives it and hears it. So the part we play as a teacher is not that we have a terrific command on a subject, and then with that terrific command of a subject we just come into a class and then deliver what we have learned. If the talk I give this week is a talk that I have nurtured over a year or a half a year, the work that has been done is not this week. The work that has been done was all over the preceding months, where the spiritual consciousness of that subject was cultured and cultured and cultured, you see? And it's only then that I let go in this week. But it isn't that I let go. The subject then must speak for itself. And therefore, it is a spiritual thing. It's not a teacher that is a good teacher and a masterly teacher and knows how to teach and knows the presentation of a subject and the pedagogics of a subject and didactics of a subject. Nothing of that kind. It is the spirit of science that one has cultured and cultured that is speaking to the student. Who is the student? The student are not people sitting around. It's that mentality which is receptive for it. The receptivity, that mentality which was looking forward for this occasion, that was full of expectancy, full of promise, that can hear the message. Not the brain of the student can hear the message. Not their ears can hear the message. It's the love to go to such an talk. It's the sacrifice having been made that brought them here. That hears the message, not the people. It's again the scientific approach, the scientificalness in the student that hears the message. Yes. So, again, put it into quite a different context. What does this chapter teach when we study the Bible, when we study the textbook? Who is the teacher? Who has written the text? It's the divine mind that has written the text. It's that mind that through the prophets has written the text. It's the divine mind. It's not the prophet. It's the divine mind that interprets itself through a transparent channel called the prophet so-and-so-and-so, giving a message so-and-so-and-so. Therefore, how do we read such a prophet? We are not reading that prophet by saying, now I wonder if I can understand him, or by saying, I now make a good analysis of every word and every sentence and every verse and so on. That doesn't do the trick. Millions of the best brains have tried that way and have never succeeded. That which can read what the divine mind has dictated is the divine mind. Therefore, we can only read those pages if we read it from the standpoint of the divine mind. Therefore, can you see how important it is, say, through the passage of scientific obstetrics, first be into to see first the atmosphere, that we have the mind of Christ, and that from the point of view that I have the same mind as the mind that has written these pages, that I see I can read with no other mind but that mind which dictated the pages, then I have a oneness of teacher and student. Only then only author of a book and reader of the book is one. Yes? The author of the book is the divine mind. The reader of the book is the divine mind. And that mind is the same mind. There is only one mind. And then I have real teaching.